Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast 755.
Whoa.
That's right, man.
That's a lot.
It is a lot of podcasts.
Wow, I don't know how we do it.
I don't know how you do it. I feel like you do that many episodes of podcasts this week.
This week I'm only recording 8.
Well, we'll get to that in a second. Because Loot Crate, a multi-subscription box service for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear, is the sponsor, one of the sponsors of this episode of the Nerdist Podcast for less than $20 a month. 6 to 8 items that include licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items, and more.
So I'm guaranteed more than 5 items.
Loot Crate is like a friend who knows what you love and then surprises you with an awesome present every month. And you are the puppeteer of that. You could surprise yourself.
That's so I could sign up for it, forget, and then guess what? It's an extra surprise.
That's right. And if you lived in Canada, Australia, or the UK, you would also still be able to do that, Matt and Myra.
Oh, that's fantastic. More English speaking for
site.
The win.
Make sure to head to lootcrate.com/nerdist. Enter the code NERDIST to save 10% off any new subscription. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific each month to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, it is over. But you know what's really fun about the community of Loot Craters is that, like, I wear this D&D t-shirt that I got in Loot Crate, and when I see it out in public, I see people, I go, Loot Crate, and they're like, you know it, you know, and they call out the month. Like, it's a really cool thing to see that stuff out in the world, because I know.
It's like a club.
It is a club. Katie, you were here the whole time?
Yep.
All right.
Nerdist Corkboard.
Nerdist Community Corkboard. Here's Katie Levine.
Well, first of all, I just want to tell people to listen to the You Made It Weird episode with Flanagan, who owns Largo.
Yes.
It came out last week.
Oh, my God. That sounds amazing.
It's so good. He tells this crazy murder story. Like, it was phenomenal. And then Pete's girlfriend, Valerie, she sat in on it. And she also, I wanted to plug something for her. She works for this nonprofit called Real Girls, and they help empower girls, and they have, like, you know, special programs for them. But they are hosting a evening of powerful women arm wrestling for the empowerment of girls. Keegan-Michael Key, Mary Beth Monroe, and Emily Gordon are all judging, and all the proceeds go to the Real Girl Empowerment Program. It's Monday, November 16th at 7 p.m. at the Bootleg Theater in L.A., and you can find out more information by going to aneabogue.com.
Excellent. Thank you, Katie Levine. Matt Myra.
Yes, sir.
Which one of your multitude of podcasts might people want
to
listen to
this
week?
Here's the deal. I need some help from our Nerdist fans.
Yes.
I would like them to go, if you have half a second in your day and you have, you know, like, 300 megabytes of spare space on your computer, go on to iTunes, look up the Make Tech Human podcast. It's a podcast I did for Nokia and Wired Magazine. And want to get the numbers up a little bit right now. We've got 8 episodes out so far. Really interesting conversations with, just last week, I talked to the guy who founded Duolingo and invented CAPTCHAs.
That's awesome.
I love that app.
Oh, that's a Louis Fanon.
Correct.
Yes, I know. Louis
Fanon, he was amazing. Monica Lewinsky, John Ronson. We have a lot of interesting people on there talking about sort of technology and humanity, sort of bridging that gap. But I would just like it if you guys could download it. I don't care if you listen to it.
What's it called again?
Make Tech Human.
You should listen to it.
M-A-K-E-T-E-C-H-U-M-A-N.
I think it sounds fantastic.
H-U-M-A-N.
I think it sounds fantastic.
It's great. I mean, literally all I'm asking, is that you hit the subscribe button and download all the episodes that are out.
You should go to the Apple Store and just download
it. Here's what I want to see. I want to see if the Nerdist listeners can get, I know the exact number we're at right now, and I want to see, this comes out tomorrow, right? So this is a Wednesday.
Yep.
What else are you doing on a Wednesday? Just download this. I want to see if I can spike the numbers.
Okay.
And if you are so inclined, please listen. If you don't feel like listening to it, delete it immediately after you've downloaded it.
What a low impact request.
That's all I want you to do, guys. If you could just please help me with those numbers, I would be thrilled. So would Nokia, so would Wired.
You can make it Matt's wedding present. He just got back from his honeymoon.
Guys,
make it his wedding
please
present.
Just download it. Make Tech Human.
Make Tech Human. Presented by Nokia and Wired and Matt
Myra. Enabled by Wired.
Yes. All right. This episode is Nico Case, who is fucking rad.
My internet wife.
And she is. The first time she came on, I always knew she was funny. I didn't know how funny she was and how amazing. And she was on At Midnight and she won. And so we got her back. She's promoting her career retrospective box set entitled Truck Driver Gladiator Mule. Goes on sale November 13th. And
it's a fantastic title.
Isn't
it's
great. I love fantastic that title.
She's the best.
She's the best. She's probably in Vermont right now.
She might be in Vermont growing tomatoes right now, just recording music. So this is Nico Case Returns episode. This episode also brought to you by
The Message.
What? Are you talking about that new podcast from GE Podcast Theater in Panoply?
Yes, the one that follows Dr. Nikki Tomlin, who is a PhD in linguistics from the University of Chicago.
And Nikki Tomlin's trying to decipher this message with a team of cryptologists at a research think tank called Cypher.
That's right. They got a message 70 years ago.
And
they got a message from space. They're trying to figure out what is this?
This new sci-fi series will blur the lines between reality and fiction, very similar to War of the Worlds.
Is this real? Is this fake? I don't know.
Well, that's what you got to listen to find out.
Oh, my God.
It's like Serial with sci-fi.
This is a lot of fun from the GE Podcast Theater in Panoply.
That's right. The Message on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Download it today.
And actually listen to this one. Unlike Make Tech Human, which you can just download. I don't give a shit if you listen.
This is the Nerdist Podcast number 755. Nico Case Returns.
Da, 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 da.
Katie, roll the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
That's your chair.
I'm just assuming the position.
That's your microphone. We're in. It's happening. We raced in from the outside. It rained for 5 minutes, and I already started complaining. God damn! I mean, and we desperately need the water in this fucking part
you
of
do.
The state.
You do.
And but in 5 minutes, I was like, "Oh fuck!" Ah. And meanwhile, other parts of the country are swimming through their streets.
Mm-hmm.
We get spoiled here, but you can come in. There's no way to ruin the podcast.
Okay, good.
There's no way it is unruinable. I'm really glad you're back on though, because
you
were so fucking funny the last time you came, and then you were great on At Midnight too.
I have to give it all to Matt on that one.
Nope. Fuck that guy. Fuck that guy.
But were
great.
But you had that dude show up in the shirt, like that was the biggest coup ever.
It was a good. I feel like.
Joe Manganiello, is that his name?
Joe Manganiello.
Joe Manganiello, that's right.
Yeah, I feel like there are so many more comedy opportunities for you that you I mean, maybe you're just letting them go. When? How am I going to convince you to pursue more comedy stuff?
I don't know.
Is that you mulling it over?
No, I'm trying to take the compliment like a graceful adult.
Oh, instead of being like, no, shut up. Do you know how many people I've told your description of Dolly Parton is still such an amazingly succinct? You referred to Dolly Parton a couple of years ago as a benevolent laser.
She is a benevolent laser. She can make the highest sounds.
Still.
Yeah. And who can play instruments with nails? I mean, I guess you can use them as the picks, but still, she still has to fret with a hand.
Yeah.
And has those fucking things. I don't know how she does it.
I think when you've been playing for, you know, like 40, 50 years.
Oh, she could do that early on.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's a freak in nature, I think, is what it is.
And still touring.
In a good way.
And now Kenny Rogers is about to retire. I heard he was going to retire after he was going to do a tour and then he was going to quit.
I didn't know he wasn't retired. Only because I went to the Country Music Hall of Fame and there was a big Kenny Rogers exhibit, and I thought, oh, I guess that just makes you think people are retired for some reason, which isn't, I don't know why I thought that.
And you were like, that wax figurine looks real, and he was like, excuse me, I'm Kenny Rogers, and then it was actually him.
I was more amazed by his owning his own race car phase.
Oh.
Which I want to get to that part of my career where I own my own race car.
You want race car fame?
I've never been that famous. I want race car fame. I want to be at the part in my career where I'm kind of flagging so I get a race car.
Now, is it you sponsoring a race car or your own race car to drive around? Is it like a Nico Case car?
I drive it and I sponsor it along with mayonnaise or whoever else sponsors
right.
it.
Right, you and
I
and
hate
Hellman's.
Mayonnaise, actually, but...
You and Mustard.
Mustard and I are going to go, yeah.
Nico Case and French's mustard.
I fucking love mustard. And vinegar-based condiments.
Yeah, I am way with you on vinegar as malt vinegar, salt and vinegar are my favorite chips.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not a – I like yellow mustard And I like the brown. I like the brown mustard, but then that's about it.
You don't like the seed mustard?
I mean, I like it in theory.
So good.
But then it just, you know, it just like the seeds, the texture of it. I don't love.
I think it's a. I don't like fish, and I've never put caviar in my mouth ever.
No.
But I would assume that that's probably what people like about it. Is the seeds go?
Maybe. Seeds. You mean the eggs of the caviar?
The mustard eggs.
The mustard
explode
eggs.
Explode in your mouth.
Yeah.
And create a tidal wave of flavors.
The infamous mustard fish.
Earthy flavors.
Lays its eggs onto a golden.
It deposits its spawn on your tongue.
Directly. That's got to be some.
And it doesn't. They can't reproduce unless you smash them against the roof of your mouth and fully taste them.
That's how they reproduce? So then another fish has to come in and jizz in your mouth and then you spit it out and then there's fish babies?
I think they might be one of those kinds of fish that they're just self-fertilizing.
Oh, right. Asexual reproduction.
Like a male seahorse
or
something.
Yeah, no, I think you might be right.
Budding, maybe.
The idea of squishing thousands of tiny little eggs in my teeth is, mm-hmm. and you know, and I eat meat, but there's just something about that yeah. I can't get my head
and
around.
The roof of your mouth feels like a tiny little rib cage, like, just breaking them all up.
A rib cage that smells like an aquarium, where it just tastes like that beach.
That's where the mustard comes in to clean.
Yeah, it comes in. The mustard fish comes in to clean all the fish mm-hmm. taste out of your mouth.
That's right.
I feel like someone should animate this process and then send it to us.
If you could just get it right out of my brain right now, I can see it.
and maybe this is a video for a song that you has yet to be released. Maybe a Nico Case joint.
It kind of has to be. They would have to resurrect The Fabulous Misadventures of Flapjack. They would have to kind of resurrect that show.
What was that?
It was that show that Thurip Van Orman guy had about the little kid.
And the
pirate guy who was played by Brian Doyle Murray in his greatest, finest role of all time.
That's
and they
right.
lived in the whale's mouth.
Got it.
The top of the whale's mouth.
Do you know Thurip?
No, I don't.
Oh. Oh, I did a cartoon with him a while ago. I feel like you guys would be friends.
Well, I definitely probably would be if I lived in his neighborhood or something, but I live so far away from anyone who even thinks about making cartoons.
You've heard about electronic mail, right? I mean, there are ways that you can keep in contact with people sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. I just mean there's not a lot of people, you know, making cartoons on their tractors in my neighborhood.
Do you live on a full-on farm?
I live on a full-on farm.
Are you a like for real deal farmer?
No, because I don't sell my produce. I give it to restaurants because it's not in its professional stages. It's kind of in its early stages. Like, I don't really have time to do that full-time, so.
So you just grow stuff and then you give it to the restaurants?
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic.
For now.
What are you growing?
Tomatoes are my main love, but the tropics of Vermont make it a little hard. So, like, you'll have a really good year, and then there will be a year where some asshole, you know, puts a bunch of box store gross tomatoes in somebody's compost, and then you get blight, and then all your tomatoes die, and then... I need a greenhouse, is what I'm saying to you.
I feel like it's almost a metaphor for... art in a way, you know, like the tomatoes, you have to wait all year, you know, you wait all year and then you find out, oh, they're all fucked, you know, like what a
see the fruit and they're the most beautiful things and there's so many and then all of a sudden they're all brown and moldy and weird and you're like, thanks, man.
Yeah. Thanks, nature.
That was so much work. And yeah,
but you could spend an entire year making an album and then you put it out and it's like, what happened, you know, or yay. You just never...
It's not as disappointing to have a record flop as it is to have your tomatoes fail. And I can say that with experience. Like,
why do you think that is?
They're your babies. It's all cold and wintry out, and you're in your little weird hut that you plant your seeds in, and you're freezing, and it's 17 below, and you got your heaters out, and your lights on, you know, because it's fucking April and it's still like that.
Yeah.
And you grow them from little babies and you have the fans on them. So they blow, their little bodies blow around and they build their little plant muscles. And there's just so much consideration that goes into it. And then you got to not water them from the top. And they're just really bitchy. But then when they start to grow and they have those hairs that smell like tomatoes and there's lycopene everywhere, you just feel like a fucking superhuman.
That's great.
In a, you know, a dream.
I guess no tomato crop has ever been killed by some wannabe writer for Pitchfork either, who just wrote a bad blog post about, like, as could happen with an album.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they're capable of killing an album either, but the don't blog
you,
writers,
But
mean.
Don't you think there's a, I feel like there's this kind of mythos that, you know, there's a stratum of this blogosphere that, you know, if the right handful of people like something, then it's going to be okay. And if they don't like it, then it doesn't really. You feel like that's not the case anymore?
No, I just don't have any idea because I'm so far removed from it. I don't know. I don't ever read music press at all.
I mean, why would you? What would be the point?
Well, I mean, there was a New York Times in the van on the way over here that announced Joanna Newsom's new record. And I was like, oh, Joanna Newsom put out a new record? That's cool. But I wouldn't go looking for that kind of stuff. I kind of wait for it to come to me in this weird way. So I'm kind of the lame person that people would have to reach outside the blogosphere.
I feel like that's not lame at all. I feel like it's very tempting to get caught up in all of the, what are people saying? What am I saying? But then it just, I don't know if you ever really win anything when you find out.
You don't, you kind of don't. But at the same time, if I didn't produce my own records and I wasn't there for every step of it, I might feel compelled to know what other people say.
Yeah.
But I checked off on everything before it came out. So at that point, I'm like, I don't care. If you don't like it, you don't have to. You know, not everybody likes everything. That does not hurt my feelings. And some people, just honestly, they just like to write about themselves. So then there's that. So you want to ignore that. And then, I don't know, there's just so many weird things to think about. I don't know that, is music writing really an art anymore? Was it ever? People say that, but I only feel, I kind of like things written by the artists themselves later. But I'm not so crazy about like, for example, like those things like the Legs McNeil Please Kill Me book. That just seemed like a super cunty hanger-on. Like, I rode in their van once. Like, I saw them do drugs. Like, it just seemed like this really bitchy who's sucking whose dick, who's doing drugs. And for someone like me, like, I really wanted to know how the records were made. I really wanted to know, you know, I wanted to know, like, what posters were up in their practice space, you know? It's like, I don't care about the drug scene really. And they kind of make it about that. And I remember he had some really bitchy little dismissal of Patti Smith, and I was like, well, that's weird. But then reading what she writes about herself and the scene at that time, legitimately, I really like it, and I feel like I'm actually getting something out of it,
because it's all her point of view.
It's not like a, I don't know, I never trust those books that other people write about the bands, ever.
Like an unauthorized biography?
Yeah. Because, you know, I could read about Louis Armstrong, but reading his book about the early part of his life in New Orleans was so much more mesmerizing, because the stuff like his early jobs and like the scenery and the people around him at the time meant so much more to him than somebody who would be writing about it. Like, those are the kind of things that I think he wanted to get into his music, whereas if you didn't ask Louis Armstrong and you just decided what you thought it was about,
right,
kind of wouldn't really be the real thing. But then again, you know, I'm probably a dick about that, because I just want to swat them away. Like, you're not doing it. You didn't plug that in. Fuck off.
Yeah, yeah.
But then there's music journalism that's really great, where people are saying what's around and what's coming out, and they're excited. And so, I don't know. I need music journalism, and I respect that, but I don't go looking for it, because I don't want to be a snob about it. and I don't want to worry about it. And I just don't have time. Like, I remember when I left Seattle, I think around 98, I think The Stranger in Seattle, which was this paper I loved, had turned into the weirdest, bitchiest, you know, gossip rag. And it was purposefully mean, and that's how they were getting readers and getting attention. And I just thought, who are you people? You weren't the people I grew up with who wanted nothing more than to make music and thought it was a great thing. But really, they just didn't.
Yeah, it's sort of a cheap, and that still happens. I mean, that still happens. And I think it's sort of a cheap, because I think it's incredibly easy to tear anything down. It's much harder to build things. And so when people take the easy road of like, well, I'm just going to tear this thing down, and then a bunch of people who are wannabes who aren't doing their own thing but just sort of bitter at the world then come on and like, yeah, fuck everything. It's like, well, what if you could use that energy and do something constructive or positive. I know it's effort and it sucks, but wouldn't that be more rewarding to do it that way?
It would. And there are a lot of writers out there who love music, and they compare and contrast and make connections, and that stuff's great.
Who takes care of your tomatoes if you're on tour, though?
My neighbor, Dave.
Oh, Dave.
Dave is right on.
That's pretty rad.
Yeah, and he takes it very personally if a plant dies, so.
Well, it's important that he cares about it.
In your corner.
You want him to care about it as much as you care about it.
It's basically his garden, too. We just kind of share it because obviously I'm not home.
Are tomatoes the main crop? Is there anything else?
Well, no, but if I could get a good greenhouse system going, and if we ever legalized marijuana, I would grow that.
You would grow tomatoes in pot?
Yeah, but not because I want to smoke it, because I have absolutely no interest in it that way. Just as a fiber.
What if you made, like, pot tomatoes?
People would probably really enjoy that.
Don't you think?
Yes, I do.
I mean, like a THC BLT.
Oh, no question.
People would absolutely...
No question. It would probably be fine, but unless you were me, who pot makes me an apoplectic cunt, but it's not. I'm not really supposed to be that guy ever, and I don't want to do that to other people, but I don't mind watching other people do it, but
I haven't done it since
really
the early 2000s. It just made me really paranoid. I didn't enjoy it.
I was
really
hungry, and I was angry. And then I had a little bit of a tantrum, and then I had to go to sleep, I think. And then the next day, it was like the worst PMS of my life. Like, I'd like a double greasy order of hash browns and a Coca-Cola, please. And then I don't remember what happened after that.
Well, what happened is that you said, I'm never going to do this
again. I just
said,
that's basically the dumbest thing I ever did.
I think I'm super lucky that I didn't take to it because, you know, I know people who get anxious, which, you know, I get sometimes. It's like people love it to just sort of take the edge off that. For whatever reason, my brain chemistry just, it doesn't work that way.
No.
But if it did, I think, oh, man, I would be such a huge stoner.
I know. I feel, I'm sure part of my snubbery of pot culture is to do with jealousy.
Right.
A little bit. But, yeah, I can't imagine it. If I had, I don't even know what I would use to take the edge off. But if I had it, I would use it. I would abuse it constantly.
How long have you been on the farm?
Since 2007, but 2010 full time. But
you've been there for a while. So do you like? Is that where you write? Do you write on the farm, or do you go into a studio and start writing? Do you need like a...
Oh, I do both. I'll write anywhere. I have a practice space in town too. Not here, but in the town of St. Johnsbury, Vermont.
Nice.
Everyone's heard of it.
will now. Tomato capital of the world.
Yeah, all the 6 tomato plants I grew this year. People are flocking from miles around. I'll write anywhere. So I get lots of pieces together, and then the band will come in later and we'll kind of make them into songs. But I should be doing that right now.
But you came here instead.
I did. You know why? This is funner than sitting by myself in a room in my underwear going, should I drink the Coke in the minibar? I really want to drink that Coke in the minibar.
But it's like $12 for that little Coke.
No, because it'll make me crazy and I'll bloat up into a weird water ballooned creature.
Well, then you can write about that.
No.
No? Okay. I listen to your stuff pretty nonstop. As a matter of fact, I had an Apple Music channel on today, you know, when I was getting ready for my show. But you're on pretty – I make playlists every year, and you're on almost every year. You're on a playlist somewhere.
Thank you.
But I do have a question. I guess I could have looked this up on the internet. What are you singing at the end of Dirty Knife? What are you singing? It doesn't.
Oh, it's Ukrainian.
Ah, that's why I couldn't identify the words.
It's just Ukrainian for "the blood runs crazy with giant strides."
Ah, you're just. Oh,
sorry. Did you not want
to
know that?
No, that makes me so happy. I didn't know that. You're just repeating the English lyrics in Ukrainian at the end, but it sounds like this phantasmic lullaby. Ah. Oh. You just like popped an emotional zit for me. That makes me so happy to know that. What made you decide to drop a Ukrainian bomb at the end of that?
Because in the story, it's happening to Ukrainians who live in America. That record, I was basically working on making up New World fairy tales for immigrants from other places. Mm-hmm. And that one is based on a true family story, which I can neither confirm nor deny because I don't really know all the details. But apparently, a couple people in my family went crazy in their house. And it's because there was some sort of poisoning in the well, some sort of heavy metal lead poisoning or something. And they went crazy gradually and gradually and gradually-er. And then they burned the furniture inside for heat.
Oh, my God.
And so then they had to be taken to the sanitarium, I guess? Sanatorium?
Sure.
I don't know. I was never told the end of that story, so. There's no way to know. And all the people who did know are dead, so I'm like, well, there you go. But, I mean, there's not really a concrete ending, which makes the story still kind of compelling to me. It's
very
sad. You know, that's a terrible thing to happen, but. Going mad inside your own house.
Oof. And not really understanding why, and there's no real...
That'd be terrible.
At the time, they probably weren't going, well, the well's probably poison. They probably thought they were cursed or something shitty was happening.
God knows what they were thinking. But it would definitely be a very Eastern European thing to decide that they had done bad or, you know, there were tiny little demons in the house tormenting them or... I don't know, but there would also be a funny element to it.
So had you planned that out? So just to sort of understand your writing process a little bit, had you planned that out or did you get to a certain point in the song where you thought, oh, you know, actually it might sound cool if we just throw – I mean, in other words, how intentional is it when you're recording? Do you know exactly what you're doing when you're going to record or do you just fuck around as you're recording? Go, let's try this. This might be weird and fun.
I come in kind of half-baked and then it kind of forms itself out like – Sometimes I don't think I ever have gone into a song or gone in with a song that was fully formed at the end. You know, we'll have bed tracks and the bass and drums and guitar are kind of the solids, but then you add weird things over top of that.
Yeah. And then is there ever a consideration of, well, if this goes too much in this direction, this is going to be difficult to recreate live, or do you feel like, you know, it's okay to have simpler live versions of songs versus like really produced stuff?
Oh yeah, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, how the camera adds 10 pounds. The studio takes away a lot of pounds. So you got to really put a lot of things on to create the same sounds as people on stage. Actually, it's more like the other way. It's more like you need less people live to make a huge sound than you do on a record, I think. And you can make a huge sound with fewer people, but the dynamics of my own voice or whatever, I tend to go in the more experimental direction that isn't edgy or experimental, of just trying different things and adding things on kind of orchestrally or collage-y and then taking things away.
Yeah.
Which I like to do. But it's really hard to be in a studio and not want to try all the bells and whistles, you know? It's like, well, if we can put a Tack Gambler piano on there from 1920, why wouldn't we want to just do a pass of that, you know? And digital technology has made limitless amounts of tracks, so it's not like you're limited to 16 or 24 anymore. So it gets a little unicorny in there. And
I just a friend of mine who is a complete devotee of 80s music, 70s and 80s music. She's my friend April Richardson is like the biggest Morrissey fan and like follows Morrissey on tour everywhere. Loves like 80s music and 70s stuff. And we were touring, and so we were listening to Queen, and I go, "Oh, I think my favorite song is probably the Prophet song." And she'd never heard the Prophet song. Do you know the Prophet song?
Not by title, but I'm sure I do.
It's the one where in the middle of the song there's
what record is it on?
I think it's on A Night at the Opera. It's on A Night at the Opera. So there's this weirdo breakdown in the middle of the song where I don't know if this actually happened or if this was just a myth, but my friend said, I heard Freddie Mercury just locked himself in the studio and just built the – it's an insane track of just his voice. And it's almost like he was experimenting to see how many of his own voice he could layer on top of his voices.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fucking incredible. And he's experimenting with left and right channels and filling out the sound. And
you got to get Roy Thomas Baker in here.
Okay.
He's on Twitter. I think he might even live in Los Angeles, but he loves to talk about the vocal layerings of Queen. Dude, you got to get him in here. He's a genius.
Could we talk about that
geniuses.
For an hour?
Fuck yeah, you could talk about that for an hour. I mean, I like Night at the Opera. It's not the I know Sheer Heart Attack and Queen 2 back to back, every single sound over and over and over again. And there's a lot of moments like that on those two. And so obviously those moments make me hold my hands together like Ming the Merciless or something. And I'm like, tell me more about how you did these things.
Yes, another Queen tie-in.
So purely selfishly, if we could get Roy Thomas Baker in here and we could just for like 29 hours or something straight.
Yes, but then you would have to be here and you would have to help me.
That's
we could basically
fine.
Interrogate him.
That's fine.
What happened?
I think he might like that.
I mean, when you hear stuff...
I'm just guessing, but...
I mean, I almost think... Sometimes I think limitations are actually better.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. So when you say like, oh, well, you know, we have all the resources in the world, digital, we have all this endless, mm-hmm. you know. Sometimes I feel like that's a hindrance because it
option
doesn't...
anxiety.
Well, kind of. I mean, it doesn't really force you to have to be, you know, when you have limitations, you have to be creative. Oh, well, we can't really make, we're going to have to put this in the left channel and this in the right channel to
yes.
create this as opposed to just, oh, now you can just like, you know. Mm-hmm. So how do you kind of dig an extra layer deeper? How do you force yourself to push boundaries when it just seems like, it's only like going
I'm
to Google.
I'm glad you asked that, Chris, because... I am the limitations.
So you're
I show up. I show up with that, and then I am liberated by the Batwing Glockenspiel piano.
Work around me
with orchestra bells in it. I don't know. Yeah, work around me.
Are you good with? Do you produce any of your own stuff, or do you constantly...
I produce all of it.
You produce all mm-hmm. of your own stuff.
Not alone, because that's one thing that has always bothered me since I started making music, which is, what does the producer do? Who is the producer? And it's very different in the world of, you know, big money and, you know, if you send all the tracks to someone and you go, do with it what you will, wizard, and they go, do it. But everybody who's contributed something to the recording has made choices about sound, and that is also production. So you got to give everyone credit for that. And then there are the people who just pay for it. But me, I have musical things I do, and I write and I sing and I play instruments, and then I have limited amounts of engineering, and then the actual decisions about what sounds need to go where. I can do that easily and with relish, but I don't do any of those things alone because it's boring as fuck. And I really need someone there to be the voice of reason, or even sometimes, you know how when you look at the color red for too long and you close your eyes and you see green?
Sure.
Your ears become saturated in the same way that like your eye cones or whatever those are become saturated, and after a while you just can't hear certain frequencies anymore, or you've heard something so many times, if you were to describe how the sound looked, it would look like a TV screen of news where somebody's face is scrambled.
Right.
You're like, how is that guitar solo with that, you know, thing right there? And all you would see was a digital cloud. And so you got to ask the person next to you, could you help me with that? Because I have no judgment left in my body, and I need some guidance here.
My brain's turned to melted chocolate.
Yeah, and you try to do that for each other and get ideas from each other, whoever the each other may be, one person, two people. So
you really better trust those people too.
Yeah, well, you know, if you hire people who are really great at what they do in the first place, there's very little direction you have to give them. They just come in and wipe it all over, and you're like, well, that is a fucking Picasso. Thank you.
What's your goal each time you go into the studio? Do you have different goals? Is it just like, oh, I'm just ready to purge a bunch, you know?
Nope, just make, I'm not prolific. I'm very, very precise about, like, this is what needs to happen. Some people can go in and just whip that shit out like, oh, this is a sketch of how I was feeling after my divorce. And, you know, I just can't throw things away like that. Not throw them away, but throw them out there. I'm not prolific at all. So I'd burrow into my magic mountain and do lots of seances and no.
It would work.
I focus really, really hard on really tiny things for a long time and then have to go away and then I come back and then have to go away and come back. And some things come really easily, but a lot of times there's a lot of consideration.
Are there things that you write that...
That didn't answer your question
at all. It did answer my question, actually. Yeah, it did answer my question.
I'm a little tangenty today. I don't mean to be.
You can be whatever you want.
I'm a little worn out because I've been on planes a lot. So
I want you to know something. This is your time.
No.
It's about you.
This is our time.
It's our time, but it's mainly about you, and you can be as tangential.
You're wearing a blazer.
I'm wearing, yes, I'm snazzy.
You had intention when you left your house today.
Well, I was shooting a TV show. So
I know.
If I just came over in wardrobe, of course I would dress up for you.
My intention was cover your shocking body and take it out in public in a way that is palatable for everyone.
I mean,
that's confidence, and you're here with intention.
I'm forced to dress this way by design of my job. I mean, like, it's funny, if you were to go to my house, my closet has more t-shirts than you've ever seen in one place, and work is where all the suits are. And it started to get to a point where if I'm wearing a t-shirt, people go, oh, I'm not used to seeing you wear a t-shirt. And I feel like, oh, well, that's all I would wear if I could do that all the time.
But at least you can do both. I'm at the point where I just, if I don't look like I cleaned the barn, I feel weird. Lipstick, forget it. People are looking at my face. I can't handle it.
You don't need... Fuck all that stuff.
I know. Fuck all that stuff. But sometimes it's fun. Sometimes it's fun to put on lipstick and go out and dress up or you know, lipstick, no lipstick, dressing up in a dude suit. Sure. But I would still feel like somebody's looking at my mouth. I'm going to go sit in the car. You get warped and weird as you keep living.
As you keep living, but also... If you're in any kind of entertainment and some people know who you are, it is strange. You start kind of getting like a slightly paranoid about dumb things. Even if no one in a restaurant knows who you are, you sometimes just feel like, oh, did that person just see me like pick a steak chunk out of my tooth? Because I'm not really, you know, and is that weird?
One can only hope. One time after a new pornographer show, I was so tired and I think I had just been dumped and I was so bummed out and angry and the sound had been bad and I was like, I just want to go home. I don't want to, you know, inflict myself on anyone. So when I would leave new pornographer shows, like, I have the kind of face no one ever recognizes. They only recognize my hair. So I would put my hair up in this hat and I went out into the street. And I was waiting forever in the rain. It was just like a horrible rom-com moment, which is funny because there was no rom whatsoever in the scene. But there was a cab in New York. It was raining. It was shitty. And finally, I flagged this cab down. And it came over to me. And this glittering young couple ran out from my show. And they stole my cab.
Oh!
And so I was like, and I was like, no, no, no. I was like, this is my cab. And they were like, no, it's not your cab. And I looked at the guy and he just shrugged his shoulders because there was two of them and one of me, so he could charge them more. And I was just like, oh, fuck you, dude. So I was like, I felt the curtain come down and a switch flip inside me. And I took the woman by the arm and I'm like, great, where are we going? And I got in the cab with her and I had my hand on her arm and I felt my body turning into like this weird knobby tree creature. And they were going, oh my God, you're so psycho. And then I just realized these people were just at my show looking at my face for like an hour.
And they had reveal yourself? It was me all along.
No, I didn't. I got out. I backed out of the cab slowly. I'm like, you're going to go to jail, dude. You're going to go to jail. You got to go home and like bawl over a toilet. You don't need to bawl over the jail toilet in front of other people right now.
The hole in the ground.
So I had to like back out like a mongoose surrounded by a couple cobras or something. There's only one of me. Later I will meet you on the battlefield, glittering young couple. And I will destroy you. But right now, I'm going to crawl back to my hotel room and embarrass myself to myself near the base of a toilet.
It's one of those rare times where the mongoose gets nipped by a snake and it's like, all right, not today. But you know I'm going to come back and murder you.
This mongoose was bald and humiliated, but this mongoose went to the toilet basin and sharpened its little fangs. And it's just fucking waiting. I'm waiting in the shadows.
I can't believe this. You know, the amazing thing is that that couple will live their entire lives and never know that they were in a cat. And I'm actually kind of surprised.
We have to rush home and make love.
Nico Case inspired us so much at this new pornographer show, but then this weird lady got in the cab and ruined it.
Exactly what happened.
But you were the weird lady. You were the one inspiring them. You could have taken your hair down and be like, you were like, oh, I noticed you were just at the, and then they would have completely given you whatever you wanted.
No, they would have gotten weirder.
You think so?
Oh yeah.
Can we take a picture?
Well, I also recently leaned down to tell a young woman to put her phone away, and you know when you're at a concert and you have to kind of put your hand over someone's ear so they can hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
I was like, you got to put the phone away or you're going to have to leave. Because I've asked you 3 times. And she was like, okay. And I was like, thank you. Later that night, I got a tweet from someone. Nico Case physically and verbally assaulted my friend. And I was like, okay, this kid is a kid, underage. I had to touch the side of her head with my hand so she could hear me. So, yeah, I could have totally gone to jail for, like, assaulting someone.
Maybe, but I also sort of feel like if you had assaulted someone during your show...
She would have fucking deserved it after I told her to put it... Yes. She was doing the thing where she's filming me and laughing as I'm telling her to stop.
Oh, right.
And I'm like, all right, dude, it's funny because I didn't swear. And as I was telling her, I was kind of telling her like I was like the hall monitor.
Right.
And she was in third grade. I was like, okay, sweetie, you got to put the phone down and you need to go out there now because that is against the rules.
Yeah.
Like very measuredly. And I was like, in my mind, I was also going, damn, you're not swearing. That's pretty good. I think you've made some progress. Like, that's kind of amazing. Like, and then later I realized.
If you had physically really assaulted weird. Someone during a show, that would have been a bigger news story.
It would have been bigger, but I had no desire to do that. I seriously just wanted to say, just fucking put that thing away, man.
Yeah.
But it was physical and verbal assault.
Does it bother you? Does it bother? I know there are the rules and it's just irritating right off the bat when people feel like, oh, well, the rules don't apply to me. Like that's irritating right off the bat.
That's what the iPhone does. When it's in your hand, you're like, fuck it. I am in control here.
I mean, they mean everyone else, but not me. I mean, I can do this. So it, for you, is it that you don't want video of your shows getting out into the world or is it just like, you know, could you please just enjoy the show like a human being instead of...
It's mostly that. It's mostly just the people behind you paid $30 to be here and all they can see is your screen and that guy's screen and that guy's screen. It's dark in here.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are really fucking passive aggressive and they will not tell the person next to them. They'll just complain about it on social media later. That's how I know this. And I know it from going to shows, you know, trying to see Adamant in all of his glory and I'm freaking out and there's like four people in front of me standing there who don't give a shit that the show is happening, but I can see their phones and I can't see him. So I'm like, oh, that's kind of a drag.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's the part of me that's like, I get really nervous when people point cameras at me. I've always hated it. I've always, like, I kind of don't mind if people just snap a shot here and there because I know people are excited to come to the show and it's their night too. Totally cool. But people standing there with a camera pointed at you is really unnerving, especially because people don't realize that on most of these smartphones, the focus is a fucking laser that goes in your eye. So it's like they're pointing it at you. There's a laser in your eye and you're like, I just forgot the words to the important part of the song that the people paid $30 to come and see. So that's not fucking cool. So as quality control for my own rock show for the people who paid money to get there, I also have to take a hard line on that. Like, the people don't enjoy this and I fucking hate it. And it makes me kind of aggressive at a certain point. Well, it's like you're not really fucking over the man here by taking a shitty picture or a video of me right now. Like, you're not really standing up for your rights and fucking American flags are flying everywhere thanks to you. It's more like you're just kind of shitting on people's night.
Well, I think it's also more, the intention is also a little selfish some of the times because it's like, oh, you're not enjoying the show now because you want to put this somewhere where people will tell
yeah.
you how rad you were for taking that video, which you may not even ever watch. So you really missed a lot of the show and you're not even really watching the video.
Yeah.
So why did you come here?
Exactly. And it's like, we just drove 13 days to be here. A lot went into making this show happen. A lot. And a lot of people worked really hard to get us here. Even though it seems like a simple rock show, you know, it is a lot of work. And the production costs are really high, especially because the price of gas is like twice as high as when I first started touring.
Right.
And I have, you know, three times as many people on the road with me. So, you know, if you just do that math, you're like, oh yeah, that's really fucking expensive. But if you want to keep your band working and your little tiny mini economy inside the economy going, you know, you try to do a good job, but you still have to give a shit if someone's just acting like, I don't know, it's not a petting zoo, man.
Yeah, I don't think people really understand that the economics of touring really, the margins are pretty slim, especially if you have a big band.
Because
It just costs, and then, you know, if you're touring, especially if you're touring like union houses, everything costs, there's a charge for everything.
Yes.
And so just to turn on the lights, it's like, oh, well, you're playing a bigger theater, but it costs like $20,000 just to turn the lights on and
exactly.
let people in the door, like right off the bat.
Exactly.
And then so on top of that, then, you know, you pay the band and, you know, there was a theater once where I asked for a projector and they're like, okay, well, that'll cost you $1,000. And I'm like, what? Do you need to go rent one? No, we have it, but it's just a charge that
it's locked in the audio closet and we're going to have to get the AV guy in here and he's not here today. Yeah, there's all kinds of weird stipulations, like do not walk across the stage while it's dark or there will be a $525 fee for working. Just crazy shit that you would never expect to hear. So you got to work around that, too.
Yeah.
And you're like, ooh.
Yeah, and then, you
good
know,
times.
That's why it's, you know, when it can seem like, oh, you're so much more successful. You're playing a bigger venue than the last time. And you go, yeah, but I think I actually made a little bit of money the last time, because then the jump up,
yeah,
you can actually start losing money.
Exactly.
If you know, because you obviously, you know, you don't want to charge your fans like $200 a ticket.
No. And I want to make sure that the merch isn't like $50 for a t-shirt.
Yeah,
that's some bullshit right there. So, you know,
but again, a lot of venues,
you want people
will take
to
like,
know you're thinking about them.
A lot of venues will take like 30% of
exactly.
your merch, so that's
which,
that's why they're expensive.
Exactly. Which I never agree to. Never let them do that. If you're in a band, never let them do that.
You can say no.
You can't, but I do. It's like, you want the show or not.
Oh, okay. Well, you can do that.
There's
that's
that.
Good.
And that often happens. Or, and this is something that they don't want you to say because it breaks precedent. But sometimes you can say, look, I know that you want to keep this precedent in place because you make a little bit of money this way, even though we don't ask you for a percentage of your beer you sold tonight.
Right.
So let's do it this way. You can have 5% if you give it to a local charity and you can do it in the name of your company.
Oh.
And so that works out really nicely. And that way you don't break precedent. And the people who are actually super nice, who work there, who don't even want to be fucking dealing with this or doing this to you because they know it sucks, they'll be like, got it. Like, there's creative ways around everything like that.
That's nice.
It is nice. Sometimes it isn't nice, but mostly it's nice. Or like if they provide a person to sell your stuff. Like, yeah, you should pay them for that. Absolutely. Like, that's a totally reasonable thing. But usually we have our own person, so we don't got into that kind of holdover mafia theater shit.
Traveling with the band and having to recreate a specific sound every night basically when you have a half a day to put it all together sounds so stressful to me.
And well, you get in the swing, and then it's pretty fun. You feel like you literally live like a pirate in a movie. Like, there's swearing and dirty talk and delightful sexual harassment and, you know, it definitely feels like you're in a gang, but we're like a super polite gang, and we definitely like to get things by being nice to people, not by, you know, throwing our weight around or trying to be, you know, the alpha male at Alpha Male School of Business for future stockbrokers in 1983.
Yes. Greed is good.
Greed is good. Handshake.
Fuck the other guy before he has a chance to fuck you.
Palm on top, squeeze hard. Like, it's just like the first, it's such an
reading
obvious.
The Art of War?
Yeah, it is such an obvious bluff that just makes everybody,
power.
Yeah.
You know, you got to butt fuck those people before.
Exactly.
Like, all right.
It's just like farts coming out of your eyes at someone. People are immediately just like, you're not only repelling me right now, but
I
can tell how dumb you are.
People will
in
help
this
you
moment.
Out if you ask them. You know, you don't have to butt fucking eye fart at them. Like, you could just,
exactly.
You just talk to people. And it's totally
please okay. Works pretty good.
Totally okay.
Works pretty good.
What is your favorite part of a show? Like, is it the minute when you come out on stage and you feel the instant or is it the end or is it a middle or like what do you look forward to the most?
I think I'm usually pretty excited like around song 3 or 4 when you're like, okay, the sound system seems to be holding together. Okay, I got a good monitor sound. All right, clearly the band are happy. They're chuckling behind me. That's good. Maybe Hogan will say something to me that's funny, or you get a chance to like find super adorable people in the audience who are having a good time or get excited about a certain song, and that's kind of when it gets really fucking cute.
Yeah.
And then you're like, all right. Yeah, that's the great part. Or, you know, if you fuck something up and you laugh about it and everybody else laughs too and they like it, they're there for you. They have your back. It's
well,
nice.
Also, I think those moments are better because if everyone wants to hear a perfect version of the song, they have the album. They can hear a perfect version of the mm-hmm. song, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think the reason that people come out to a show, and I think also the reason why it's very difficult to shoot these types of things, is because it's such a communal experience and it's mm-hmm. such an intimate experience. And so if you fuck something up or if something happens, like that's your special moment that you guys created as a group and everyone feels like they're a part of this
yeah.
thing together.
If I'm finger banging you and you're feeling it, don't get your fucking iPhone out to check a text in the middle because I've been working for years on my technique, and I need you to be there with me.
You just lean. Nico Case finger bang my friend and then yelled at her?
Oh, don't even let that go to air because we're going to jail.
Oh, no. Why would we? We're not
going I don't know.
To, we're not going to go to
You're
jail.
Not allowed to make jokes about finger banging, I guess. It's the audience is consensually finger banging me back as I finger bang them,
so
et cetera.
So it's a two-way.
There's
it's a
warm
two-way finger
glow
bang.
Over the room.
There's a finger bang dialogue happening.
Yes.
It's a little bit of you come here and you come here.
Our communal fingers kind of make the swing C that is the grasslands together.
Yes. And then
picture it. It's beautiful.
And then by the end of the show, just full-blown scissoring. Just full-blown you and the audience scissoring mm-hmm. together in a cacophony
it's like,
of musical.
It's like all those scenes in movies of, you know, in the orgy where things have been happening for a few hours and everyone's kind of like drinking absinthe and hanging around partially disrobed.
What movie is this?
Eating all kinds of movies.
You don't mean literally. You mean
literally all kinds of movies, like the orgy scene.
Okay,
where
after
like
Caligula,
partway through.
I'm out. What other orgy?
Well, Caligula isn't really that movie. I think I notice that every time I watch Titus, like everyone's kind of worn out, and they're like, "We're still at the orgy." I think I was watching something like Penny Dreadful the other day, and everybody was perfectly artfully arranged in the orgy moments, like there were stage directors at the orgy. I mean, literally there were, because it's a TV show. But you know, you suspend your disbelief for that shit, and it's fun.
I mean, first of all, I've not seen Penny Dreadful, and I feel like I should watch it because, you know, I like a good anthology show. But is it worth watching? Do you like it?
I'm just so into Eva Green, I don't really care what anyone else does.
Oh,
Eva
amazing.
Green is so, she's like this super babe, but she is so excited to be like as ugly as she can possibly be. She's like the Amy Sedaris of Europe. She's like, I cannot wait to be every character that ever was and scrunch up my face and have pee all over the front of my nightgown. Like, take me there.
Well, the other thing about...
I need to express and I need to do it now. Put some blood and poop on my face because I'm ready.
Mr. Bond. I think the thing about her that I love the most is that she's, first of all, a phenomenal actress and also fucking crazy smart.
Mm-hmm.
She's crazy smart.
Yeah.
But it is kind of funny because she does just have this natural elegance that just cascades off her.
Mm-hmm.
And I moderated a panel for a movie she was in. I think it was the 300 sequel. Maybe it was at Comic-Con. And it was just... I know that she's super smart, but it was really funny to hear her say, well, I mean, in reality, I'm really just a big nerd. And I think a bunch of people in the audience were like, I don't think you are. You know, like, even though she might be.
Did a little tear come out of your eye?
A little tear came out of my eye.
I love you, Eva.
Yeah, but she's...
She could star as a toilet bowl brush in a movie and come off as a smart badass doing it. Like, she just seems like she's got her shit together. Like, she cares hard, but she's like, so be it.
Yes. That's such a good attitude to have. I mean, I think I'm only just figuring that out now. Instead of getting so caught up in, oh, if I do this, what are people going to, and how's that going to affect? And like, I don't know. Hopefully it'll just be fine and it's not a big deal. Are you at that point, or were you always at that point?
I'm at this weird crossroads because I'm 45, so... And in the entertainment industry. So I have to get my picture taken a lot. Otherwise, I would never think about that sort of thing. But I sometimes walk around and I see, like, airports are a great place for this. You see ladies who've had a lot of cosmetic surgery.
Yeah.
And I saw a guy the other day who was obviously getting those, like, chemical peel burn-off treatments that take off pieces of your face, kind of. And I just, it makes me so sad.
Well, yeah, because...
I just feel so depressed, and I'm just like, there's probably nothing, there's nothing wrong with you.
I know, but everyone's got their own issues. I just hope that I don't go through a thing ever. Because now I go, well, I'll just, yeah, I'm going to get older, and I'm going to look different, and I don't... Because especially when guys do it, I don't know. There's this weird thing where the surgery doesn't even – it's not that it makes you look better. It just morphs everyone into these weird animated fuck dolls. Like they just kind of have that weird
– I don't want to change my body for HD. Do you ever see that thing where – like the other day I was watching TV like 1 in the morning after some show and – I was like, ooh, hello, trucker movie starring Patrick Swayze.
Yeah.
How you doing? And it was that movie Black Dog with him and Randy Travis.
Mm-hmm.
And it was obviously made way before HD, but the channel, I think it was, what was it, AMC, is an HD or something. So it's like you could see every little pore on poor Patrick Swayze's face and like all the makeup over top of it and Randy Travis's terrible stuck on beard. But I know it didn't look like that at the time because it wasn't broadcast in HD or something. So I'm like, oh, well, that's a bummer. I like HD for nature shows, but it's not really nice to people at all.
No.
And I feel fucking ripped off that we are now using horrible fluorescent lights for everything. I feel I'm pretty young looking for 45, but it's being stolen from me by the fluorescent fucking closet bulb. And I'm like,
do you know,
I've lived very clean all these years.
It's so hard to get, it's so hard when someone, you know, they're watching something in HD and then someone says something to you on Twitter like, whoa, you look pretty tired. And you're like, it's the lighting. I swear it's the lighting, because if it hits you in a certain way, it looks like you have more under your eye, you know. But I just sound like a complete narcissistic freak where they're like, first of all, they go, yeah, it's the lighting. And then second of all, why would you care that much? I'm like,
yeah.
I don't know. To me, that's one of the worst things you can say.
Because I'm healthy.
Yeah, I'm fine. I work hard.
I'm still fertile and young and dewy and all that stuff, which I really am. But, and you know, honestly, I don't really care if the rest of the world feels that way. As long as I find one person who thinks I'm super fuckable till I'm 90, it's okay. But at the same time, like, it's just ingrained in you. Like, oh, and does anyone like pictures of themselves? Anyone in the world? Maybe, probably not.
I don't think so, because you always, the good news is this. Whatever you zero in on, unless you have an undeveloped twin sprouting off the side of your head, is probably, like, when people look at you, when you look at other people, you usually just see them as a single image. Like, but whatever you focus on the mirror, you're like, oh my God, I have this weird thing. And everyone's going to, like, most of the time people don't, they don't notice that shit, or they don't really care.
But what I want to know is, why do we need HD for movies that aren't like,
because
300?
It sounds more expensive.
I'm not a fucking Falcon. I don't need to see it that good.
Well, Falcons don't need HD because their eyes are really good.
That's exactly what I'm saying, Chris. I don't need to see fucking Bradley Cooper.
That's a problem.
In HD, ever.
A Falcon could never watch Black Dog because they would, even in its original form, they'd be like, I can see the makeup and the beard.
I know that I don't want to eat Bradley Cooper from here. Blurry. I don't need to see him in HD.
It is puzzling, but I think
I've had three mice this morning and I don't need that. I
like this idea of the exasperated Falcon. I've had three mice. You know, I'm gorging on mice. I'm just shame eating these mice.
Yeah, and are we making television way more crispy than the human eye is even capable of noticing?
Oh yeah. When they're like 4K television, 8K television, like, it's just, you know, when you look at the resolution on, you know, when you're this camera, it's it shoots, you know, it's 14 million pictures. You're like, I don't, but you can't.
But then, like, somebody's 12 and you're like, that's a lot of makeup on that 12-year-old.
Yeah.
It's make them feel kind of weird, you know?
Well, the kid looks tired, you know. We gotta make him look good for television. It is. I think there are some shows that, you know, they should just leave alone.
Yeah.
But it's, because especially, like, when you buy old movies on iTunes and they're like, oh, you could buy this movie in HD, like, but it wasn't shown in HD. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't I just buy it in a smaller standard def file size? Why do I need to try to
see, or if
it
you're
going to
watch something on your computer, I've done that accidentally. I've accidentally bought HD, and I'm like, I just bought Adventure Time, a two-dimensional cartoon in HD. Like, I don't really know what that's going to sharpen up for me between HD and SD.
No, all it's
like,
gonna
it doesn't make any sense.
You're going to, you know, it's going to be like a gig-sized file. And then
I'm never going to watch it bigger than this. So it's like, it's never going to be corrupted whatsoever. But I just paid, you know, $12 more for that. It doesn't make any sense.
You know, I wonder if there's going to be a point where there's going to be a device where you can that's almost like an electromagnetic pulse or something that disengages, something that turns off, you know, portable electronic devices. So when you go to a show, you could turn it on and it would basically like make everyone's, I wonder if people would go fucking bananas if that happened. If you could deactivate everyone's devices, but just during a show.
I really want that.
There has to be something.
I really want that. So if somebody could make that, who's listening right now, that'd be great.
Or if even
I also want Vampire Vision, where we have a TV show where it's just like the news, but you can see through everybody's bodies and see their hearts beating and stuff. And I think to myself, if I was a falcon or a vampire, which one of these people would I eat?
That's a great...
Who looks healthiest inside?
oh my gosh, who does look healthiest inside? You like news people who looks healthiest?
Or just people on TV. I'd be like, not bad.
I don't know. I feel like there are some people.
It's not about sexy. It's about who looks most nourishing.
Who looks, yeah, who looks the least like caviar?
Yeah, like haven't you thought that on a plane before? Like, okay, if we crash, who would I eat? Because I would feel bad about that, but I don't mind if anyone eats my flesh if I die. I'm pretty, I don't smoke or anything. I probably taste okay.
You eat a lot of organic tomatoes?
I do. But I also eat artificially colored sour candy when I'm in the wrong mood, so.
Oh. So we'd be sweet.
I could be a cancer puck for all you know.
You don't even, people would
I don't know.
Well, that's sort of the risk. Like, look, eat me, but at your own risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's up to you. You can have it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't guarantee what's going to happen. I sort of, like, there are some people that I imagine, like, you know, I don't think I'd want to eat Charlie Rose. I feel like Charlie Rose would be a little chewy.
But what if he's like brisket?
Oh.
What if he's just delicious and like has been soaking in like brown sugar and scotch or something and he's just fucking tender and delicious?
I don't know. I feel like he'd be, at best, I feel like he'd be a mildly flavored pork rind. I don't know if he...
Well, who would you eat that's famous?
Let's see. Oh, that's a really good question.
I think I'd go straight for children, first of all.
Well, the tenderest meat, like the veal.
Go
the veal of
for
people.
The
sure you would. Sure you would.
Which ones aren't really contributing? Start with those. You got to eat. You got to source them ethically.
This one not doing any homework?
You never pick up your room. Your muscles are tender. You don't exercise.
I'll clean my room. I'll clean my room. It's a little too late. A little too late for that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Is it the one, I mean, you know, would you really want like a marbled, you know, would you
the
want
girl, to the girl that was in True Grit, she looks like she would be super healthy. And she's a really good actress, so I probably wouldn't eat her because she's too valuable. But she's like Kobe, child meat.
Yeah, now see,
so we can't eat her.
Personally, I think you'd want to go athletes, right? Because then you'd have the most robust.
No, everybody says stringy, like because they don't ever want animals to get well muscled.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But isn't that what you're eating?
Yeah. Well, it's too tough if it's well muscled.
Oh, I guess that's true.
I don't agree with that, but.
So you wouldn't want to have like shack steaks because those would be just to the meat would be too tough.
That would be eating like killer whale meat or something.
I guess
I would
that's
just be
true.
That would be like eating a tiger steak, and you would just feel like I'm not worthy of this. I can't. Predator on predator action is fucked up.
There was an amazing picture on Reddit today of an 18-foot crocodile who had a bull shark in its mouth, and it was funny to see like predator versus predator. But the look on the shark's face—I mean, normally they are just sort of like dead-eyed,
uh-huh.
But it created this tone in the shark's face, like, what the fuck, this can happen? Like, he just seems so shocked, like, no, this is not how this shit's supposed to go down, like, because his crocodile was fucking monstrous, and the shark never, I think the shark just didn't understand, like, oh, this is a thing that
I don't Google unless somebody tells me something like that, but my brain just went, you and me later in the hotel, we're going to meet up on this one.
Yeah, I think, okay, so I'm still trying to think about who I would eat. I think, Katie, who would you eat? I'm thinking of actors or news people. I wouldn't.
Do you want to eat someone you hate?
Then it'd be bitter.
You just want to kill, you just want to, yeah. Like a good throat rip, like American and Werewolf in London style.
I mean, you know what? I want to eat the cast of Game of Thrones. The cast of Game of Thrones look like they'd be pretty tasty. Or
you need somebody with really nice skin because they're probably healthy.
Fuck. Did you watch Game of Thrones?
Beyonce has really nice skin. I bet she would taste pretty good.
I think Beyonce and Jay-Z together would be like a nice two course. I think that'd be really good.
They do have a baby, Chris.
That's my rule. No babies.
I think you know where I'm going with this.
Wait, what?
I think she's a toddler by now. We could use that religious law, like they become self-aware at 7 or something. So you can eat them after they're 7.
After they're 7.
And they're not contributing.
Yeah, and they're not contributing. I mean, there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of rules that would have to be put in place so the courts would be like, all right, you know, honestly, we're fine with this.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're taping at one of your shows, automatically you become food. How about that rule?
No, I don't want to eat those people.
No?
They're usually pretty sedentary. Not real stander-uppers.
Don't you think? You don't want any people
not real stander-uppers. Like,
all right, that's fair.
I can see the ghost rascal under them just looking at them in the crowd, filming lazily with their shoulder arms just locked in place.
Totally
like
fair.
Like a TV tray.
You know who I think would actually be really tasty?
Who?
Anderson Cooper. Anderson Cooper looks like he'd be really good. Or
like a venison stew style,
kind of
Anderson Cooper.
Yeah, it's like I feel like he'd have a smoky flavor
with some heritage peas.
Yeah,
in a nice brown sauce.
Just finishing it off in a
mm-hmm.
nice way.
Mm-hmm.
I also think Vincent Kartheiser, who played Pete Campbell in Mad Men, would probably be pretty tasty. Just gnawing on the cheeks.
You know, he looks like he would taste like corned beef to me.
Do you think so?
Yeah, and corned beef always tastes like you're trying to hide bad meat with another flavor, kind of. It's like the argument, well, like, don't ever eat chocolate ice cream because chocolate masks every bad flavor.
Oh, interesting.
No offense to the guy who plays Pete Campbell because he's fucking excellent.
Oh, he's amazing. But I think he would also be delicious.
I mean, earlier in his career on the show, I guess he didn't look so corned beefed yet.
Right.
But that was the whole point.
They aged him on the show.
That he was supposed to look corned beefed.
Yeah,
so
they aged him.
To the makeup department at Mad Men, I have to give them a huge kudos for that.
Yeah. I think that's good. I feel like maybe there's one or... You know, I think the cast of Supernatural would be pretty tasty, too. Do you watch Supernatural at all?
Mm-mm.
Well...
Joan on Mad Men would have tasted fantastic.
Without a doubt.
The lady glows. Her skin is fantastic.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Mm.
I mean, that would be like, you know, we went to, I took my friend Matt for his bachelor dinner. A bunch of us went to Mastro's Steakhouse in Beverly Hills the other night.
Mm.
Just melt in your mouth. I feel like that would be the experience. Just really buttery and delicious. I really feel like, I think people would, as long as you're willing to share your other people steaks, I don't think anyone would really get upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
These are all hypotheticals, right?
Forrest Whitaker. Oh, fuck, he would taste good. That man has nice skin. Yeah.
Forrest Whitaker would taste delicious. Who else? Anyone from the Avengers cast? You think Jeremy Renner would taste really good? Katie's throwing in the hat for Jeremy Renner. Throw a Renner on the Barbie. You couldn't.
Terrence Howard.
Yes, Terrence Howard.
Oh, Terrence Howard would taste good.
I don't see any reason why we couldn't just.
We're just
go through
we're basically
everyone.
Like in the silence. We're just sitting here with our heads cocked and our mouths just, open, like, huh? Who would be good? Who would be good?
It's gonna be weird when I go home tonight and I see my fiance. I'm like, honey, who would you eat? And she's not gonna have any context for this at all.
But I'm sure she's used to it.
With me?
She'll probably just, you're not going to marry a woman who doesn't just answer that question, right?
I think she would just answer the question,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, see? There you go.
I think she would just answer the question. Because she's very much a carnivore. She very much likes meat.
Well, if she answered that question, that's why you put the ring on it, friend.
So, and now we're back to Beyonce. I feel like anyone who's still listening to this needs to pipe in on the thread on the website and let us know who you think would be delicious.
Mm-hmm. This isn't
served up anyway.
This is not a sexy question.
No, served up anyway.
This is not a fetish question. It's who looks like they have healthy and delicious meat to eat.
Yeah.
On them.
And who looks like they're, you know, because if you're a smoker or if you drink too, it's just like it's going to make the meat.
Yeah, like
weird.
I don't want to eat Harry Dean Stanton, even though I love Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah, no. I feel like that would just sort of be like eating old cotton. It would just be like, blah, 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 blah. Like, I don't think
it would be like eating a cigarette filter, maybe, which I've done by accident.
No!
Yeah, I got a cigarette filter that, wait for it, had been smashed under a boot because you could see the little sidewalk pebbly imprint on the cigarette butt, but it was in a piece of pizza in Toronto.
Where the fuck?
It was under the cheese.
Oh, no.
I seriously had it in my mouth. I didn't swallow it, but
no,
it was gross. So I feel like I know what it would be like to be served a bit of Harry Dean Stanton.
Now,
no offense to Harry Dean Stanton, because I think he's a really great actor, too.
He is fantastic. Not to put you on the spot, but do I look delicious? I am wearing TV makeup right now.
Yeah, but you'd be like having kind of like, I'd say pheasant.
So you think I'm gamey?
No, pheasant's not gamey at all.
It's not?
You'd be between like Cornish game hen and pheasant.
Okay. You know what? I'm okay with that.
But you're not as small as a Cornish game hen. That's why I went with pheasant.
Pheasant, that's a respectable size bird.
It's a sweet poult.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah. And they're really great at eating ticks. If you have a farm out there and you need game birds that eat ticks, there you go.
Do you have pheasants on your farm?
Oh, I'm about to, Chris.
This place is going to be shitty with pheasants by the time. That's what I don't know why I have an irrational fear of Lyme disease. Just an irrational fear of it.
I don't know what. Well, it's not. I know a lot of people with Lyme disease, and it's not really irrational because people get it a lot, and it's just totally disabling in a lot of ways and ruins people's lives. So.
And you may not know you have it for a while, and if you can catch it in time, you can be okay. But if you don't, you just are.
But if you don't, there's still good treatment out there.
There are treatment options out there. But I think it's just that. Being attacked by a tiny invader that you aren't aware of.
It's fucking gross.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
But in Vermont, they have that
It's
up
like
there.
A horror movie. Oh, yeah. I was looking at a scar on my clavicle today from a tick that I got, like, I don't know, 2 months ago, which happened on, like, the sketchiest night of my life at my own house, which I didn't think was possible, like, in my idyllic countryside. I went for a bike ride and I was like, oh God, this is so great. I'm done cleaning the hay out of the hayloft. I feel all brawny and manly. I'm going to go for a bike ride and just put it over the top. Like, look at those clouds. Maxfield Parrish, he wasn't lying with a single stroke of his brush. I'm going out there. So I go out and I'm literally wearing a tank top and like a pair of shorts and a pair of shoes. And I have this bike, no light. There's no cell phone reception, so I didn't take it. I didn't take a flashlight. I didn't take any water because I was just going for an hour.
Sure.
And I knew I would be back. So I went out on this little bike ride and I was already done. And I was like, oh, it's so beautiful still. I'm going to continue my bike ride. So I decided to go down this road that I thought I knew. But the road has the same name, both forks that go in a fork, you know, like, so you don't know which one you're taking. And I'm like, oh, I know this. And so I ended up like 12 miles from my house. And I noticed that the clouds are coming in, much like today. And I'm like, fuck, I don't really know where I am. And I'm like, well, I'm in Vermont. I'm just going to go up to somebody's house and I'm going to ask. And they'll probably just give me a ride home because they're that nice. Because people are always worried about you. So I asked some people and they're like, oh, no, you missed it. Oh, that's far. I'm like, okay, great. So I ride like another 6 miles and I'm like, there's big hills and I'm like exhausted and the mosquitoes are coming out, which is bad. And so I rode up to this little farmhouse on the edge of the road and there's an old guy in there with what looks like some sort of fire department kind of stuff going on. So I'm like, okay, fucking thank God I got a real Vermonter here. They will totally like carry me over their head with a lantern strapped to their forehead and give me a sandwich. That's how nice they are. So I walk up and the guy's like, oh no, you're so far from that town. I guess if you go that way, you could reach the highway.
On a bike.
And I'm like, holy shit. And I'm like, well, how do I do that? And he's like, go that way. It's getting dark. And so I get on my bike and I'm sad. And I at least know where the truck stop is that I'm going. So I'm like, okay. And Matt will know where the truck stop is because apparently he spent much of his youth near this truck stop.
All right.
He would have picked me up and given me a ride.
He would have.
Damn it, if he wasn't here in Los Angeles.
Piece of
living the high
asshole.
Life.
I know.
Totally. Anyway, so I get to the truck stop. Like, the second I pull up to the truck stop, it's just thundering, lightning, pouring. I'm soaked. I'm basically a nude little claw at this point. I'm like a chicken claw with like kind of exercise clothes on. And I put my bike behind the fucking ice machine because I don't have a lock. And I walk in and the fucking guy who sees me every fucking time I go in there, I'm like, can I please, where's the payphone? He's like, oh, they went out with the dodo, those.
Oh, no.
I'm like, okay, fuck you, man. And so I'm standing there just soaked and freezing. And it's the middle of the summer, so I shouldn't have been freezing. But it was like, there's only air conditioning in this place. I'm soaking wet. And so he's just like reading his paper and like eating candy. And I'm just like, you fucking asshole. I'm like, can I? And I'm sitting there, no cell phone. My roommate's gone. His best friend is gone. And I'm like, whose fucking phone number do I know? So this story's going on way too long.
No.
But basically what happens is I'm standing there for a long time and these two dudes from Brooklyn feel sorry for me. And they're like, hey, what's going on? And I'm like, oh, just my bike. You know, I got lost and then now I'm here. Did not expect this to happen, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, well, I'll tell you what. I'm eating dinner with my family over here. It's going to take a while, but I'll give you a ride if you're still here. So I'm waiting there. And I go through the phone book. I call people's parents on the phone that I think I've found in the phone book. Nobody answers the phone anywhere because it's like 10 o'clock on a Friday night. So I'm like, fuck. So I stand there for a long time and the guy is still just eating candy and like, whatever. I look like some weird prostitute. Like all I can see is like the no lot lizard sign like flashing on my forehead. And people are coming and going and looking at me like, ew. And I'm trying to add up how much money I've spent at this truck stop in my life that I can't get any help. And then finally the dudes come out with their family. It's their two brothers, it turns out. And the guy's wife hates my fucking guts. And she's looking at me like, who's this slut you're taking home? And he's like, we'll be back in a minute. Going to drop off the wife and the kid and we'll come get you.
Oh.
So I'm like, great. They're auto detailers from Brooklyn. But you know, these guys are the only people who are willing to help me. And I'm like, great. I don't know anything about you. You reek of cologne. And I'm grateful. Thank you. Your wife wants to slit me open with a box knife, but whatever. That's okay. So they go and I can kind of see myself in the door and I see like this weird, I'm like, how did I cut myself? And I scratched my clavicle and it was just a tick just living on my body. And I was like, this is fucking great. So there's the tick. And then they came back and I get in there tiny weird, like it's not a CRX. It's like whatever kind of Fast and Furious mobile you would have from Brooklyn moving to some weird suburb of a suburb in New Hampshire. So I get in the back seat of the car. I'm shivering. They have the bumping system cranked. And they're like, so? And I think the dude's trying to set me up with his brother in the front seat. Like, so no boyfriend or husband to come pick you up is like the first question.
Oh,
which
no.
Is like, so the first thing they do is they turn off onto the dirt roads. And I'm like, great. I actually do know those roads. And so I'm in the car and we're going around really fast and then really slow and then they're getting lost. And luckily I realized that they just wanted to smoke out of their bong while driving me home and get super wasted. So that was fine. They kept wanting me to smoke pot too, and they kept kind of being like, well, so what about your husband or whatever? And the other guy's like, yeah, my ex, blah, 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 Facebook. And that was the longest story I've ever told, but I did get home. You know what? They were so bad, yet so great, because they were the only people willing to help me. And I felt bad for kind of like prejudging them, like, okay, that's where you're going to dump my body.
And you would never say like, have you ever heard of the new pornographers?
No.
You would never name drop.
No, nobody would ever know that stuff. And you don't want to do that.
If it's your only, if you're looking for a connection point, I mean, like you wouldn't walk into the truck stop and be like, Nico Case, huh? Fox Confessor?
No, they don't. No, they
like,
don't.
You wouldn't, but if you're in a dire state and you're trying to connect with someone, it might help them understand.
No, it's the thing where you know that there are five people in this county and like, you know, I'm in here every other day. Like, don't act like you don't know me when I'm freezing and I'm cold and I can't find anyone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Come on.
I think you should write a song about those guys.
I don't think I have to.
Okay. You have to.
Nope.
I have talked to some people, and
there are some people I hate, but they don't deserve songs written about them.
All right, then.
That's too much intention.
Fine.
I hope you cut out most of what I've just said, only because I think I just told the most boring story of all time.
It wasn't boring. I was very engaged.
It's just that you make me feel comfortable.
Well, I appreciate that. I was worried that you died in the story. I wanted to make sure you got home okay. What if you're like,
I could have died in the story.
You could have. There were so many
easily.
Points. There were many points where you could have died in that story.
These dudes, they could have just been traveling through.
Well, even just getting to that, biking 18 miles somewhere. There are many points. Many points. And did you do the tick check to make sure that it wasn't like, okay, I don't have the bullseye?
No, it had only been on me for like 2 hours. I even knew where I had gotten it at that point. They have to be on you for like 30 hours or something.
Oh, okay.
So I wasn't worried about it. It swelled up all weird, but hey, what are you going to do?
You seem fine.
I'm fine. Except for my Peter Brady voice, which I'm using now.
Puberty's very hard.
I have this weird disease where I'm going through puberty every now and again. It's called my period.
Every now and again.
Every now and again, I just go, yeah.
12 times a year, I get my puberty. Well, we should probably mention that you have a retrospective box set that
people
should pick up.
Yes, I do.
Which I have here called Truck Driver Gladiator Mule. November 13th. Mm-hmm. This is your entire solo discography.
Yep.
On vinyl.
Yep.
All 8 studio titles.
That's right.
On vinyl.
It's on vinyl.
It's on vinyl.
There's a book, and then there will be another book accompanying the book at a later date that I choose.
Honestly, I'm not just saying this because you're in front of me, but you are legitimately one of my favorite artists. And I tell everyone when they say list your favorite, I tweet at you sometimes like, oh, and every album is like its own experience and its own story. And I know that's what an album is supposed to be, but legitimately with you, every album has its own vibe and thing and story, and there's a thing to it. And I really... They are albums that I don't cherry pick songs. I could listen to them start to finish and each. Oh, and this song. Oh, and I really like this song too.
So, I miss experiencing records that way.
Do you not get to anymore, or do you just don't?
Well, it's just I get most things digitally because that's what happens. I live in the middle of nowhere. You know, there's not like an independent record store next to my house. So I do that. I do buy vinyl and CDs and whatnot when I'm out and about. But I don't really get the chance to do that anymore either. But yeah, I like that.
I was just going to get a record player, like an old-timey record player for my house, just to sit and have to listen to stuff the way that it was intended.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we did work really hard to make it sound in a way that, you know, if you were a stoner with a huge disposable income and you had an amazing stereo system in 1975, like... It would sound sweet in the cans. The stereo imaging would go right through your skull, in and out like a pong, like pong,
mm-hmm.
just back and forth. It would be beautiful. And, you know, the dudes who actually know how to really do that shit from that era actually had a lot to do with all these recordings. So they know what they're doing, and it will sound good like that.
Are you going on tour anytime soon?
I think, well, we did a show yesterday in San Francisco at the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Fest, and... So we're kind of on tour. Hopefully there will be more later, but I kind of got to make another record too. But I have to say, talking about social media and all that other stuff, like I kind of miss rareness. And so with the box set, I didn't put behind the scenes things so much as just snippets of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the book, I don't like it when everything is filmed. I don't like it when every single part of the recording process is photographed or filmed but I tried to put in lots of things that are like photos or little images that were happening during that time. Cause I miss rareness. Remember when you didn't know everything about the artists? Like there were pictures on the records, there were liner notes, and there were videos sometimes, but there was still radio. So your imagination had so much more to do with what you were listening to in a way.
You got to write the story.
Yeah. And you still can with the songs themselves, but you know, it's like the, you know, check out the Vogue behind the scenes of session of this.
The behind the scenes session.
Yeah, it's kind of an overkill. And that's another reason why I don't want people filming the show or what have you.
Keep it special.
It's just not that. Yeah, that. And it's like, it's just not all that interesting. And I also think that if aliens see the cloud content, they're just going to be like, humans think they just shit gold. This is the most arrogant race of creatures. Like,
why would they put all of, why would they commit all of that?
I'm just as guilty. I'm like, well, I can't, I'm really pack rated. I can't throw away like the different test runs of how we decided to try different filters on some photo of what have you. You know, I'm like, oh, but look at the procession, or I don't know what, but it's the shit and gold problem there, I guess.
Well, in the old days, yeah, you actually had to create the look using the world and lighting. But now you're just digital. Yeah, so it's the Virginian, Furnace Room Lullaby, Canadian Amp, Blacklisted, The Tigers Have Spoken, Fox Confessor Brings the Flood, Middle Cyclone. The worst things get, the harder I fight, the more I love you, which is what you were the last time you were here.
Yes.
That was that. Mm-hmm. And then an 80-page full-color photography book of not everything, but enough cool stuff.
Well, what I realized with that is I had so much stuff that it wasn't going to fit in that book. So I will make another one as well, where there will be more writing in it, which is what I'm kind of working on now. But then I'm like, you're not a writer, dude. You got to make a record. You got to. So, yeah. Option anxiety.
I'm going to come to Vermont and eat a fucking tomato.
Don't make me, like, people have pictures of their babies on their phones. I got pictures of my tomatoes on my phone. I'm not kidding. The Cherokee Purples, they were fine this year.
Really? So there's a lot of different strains of tomatoes?
Yeah, there's all the old heirloom varieties, and they just taste so good.
Can you just eat a tomato like an apple? You really could just snack on
one? The flavors are so complex, and, you know, most people I know say that they never had a tomato that didn't taste like styrofoam until they were in their 30s, unless they grew up on a farm. Because, you know, supermarket tomatoes are just all blech.
Yeah.
Mealy red mush that you put on a burger.
Listen, I'm in. I'll come over and have a tomato.
You're welcome. Anytime. Well, I mean, you got to come over if I have the tomatoes, I guess. Because you'll have to wait. It's going to be about 8 more months, Chris.
You said, where's my fucking tomato? You said. Now
stop.
I just
looking at the tomato. It won't ripen.
Now all we have to eat is this Charlie Rosebush. Guys, that was a I know, I'm sorry.
He might taste okay.
I don't know. Again, I think with him it could be a little like jerky soaked in
Drambuie.
Jerky soaked in a Drambuie sponge. Like it was just submerged in Drambuie.
Blackberry liqueur.
You probably get a little buzz. He's probably Charlie Rose is probably a dessert meat.
I bet he is a dessert meat.
He's kind of a dessert meat. Listen, I want you to come back whenever you want to come back. If you're ever playing in Los Angeles.
Have me back all the time. I promise to never tell a boring story like my
Your story wasn't
story.
Boring. It was a harrowing tale of someone who was attacked by nature.
Well, it was like
a
movie. You really can walk out your front door and totally screw yourself over and end up being carved open by a couple dudes who want to make your skin into a football.
And it
you never know. But luckily, they're just dudes who maybe want to drink a couple Midori rum balls, melon balls, and like have uncomfortable sex with you in a public men's room. And you could get Lyme disease.
From the dude.
But yeah. But then you also have pneumonia from being soaked in the rain.
The joke's on you, Tick. I just gave you HPV. Like, he's giving the Tick back a disease. You give me Lyme disease, I give you HPV, Tick. How you like that? Huh?
Yeah.
And I also like the story that, you know, it was just...
Literally, till the last second, I was waving goodbye into my house. He was like, is your husband or boyfriend home?
Both of them.
Husband or boyfriend.
They're both home, and they're both, they have tempers.
I couldn't be all feminist and be like, dude, I was just like, he's away.
But not for too long.
Oh, he's just, he's away. He'll be back.
Yeah.
I didn't quite say it like that.
Fortunately, he keeps tabs on me with the tracking device that I have in my skin. So
it's like, all I want right now is a fluffy towel. I'll say anything to get it.
I just love the idea. Like, you know, it was a nice day. I just decided to, you know, what a great...
It was majestic out there.
It's one of those days where the intention starts off so good. And then you're like, when did this go sideways? And fuck this. This is why I don't leave the house.
Yeah. And how long would I last in the wild? I ask myself that question all. Like, if people make me angry in public, like assholes at airports or something, you know, who are rude and mean to people, I'm like, they'd last about 2 days in the wild. And that makes me happy. Instead of going, you're a fucking dick, and like making things worse, I just think, how long? 2.6 days in the wild. And then I'm like, ah.
And then it makes you feel better.
Yeah. And then, but then I went and did that, and I'm like, dude, you kind of maybe aren't the Boy Scout you think you are.
So remember, the next time you steal someone's cab and they get into it with you, that could be Nico Case.
And I might bite you savagely on the face.
Yeah.
And I probably will go to jail for it, but... You're going to be the person with the weird, you know, crescent moon face scar of perfectly shaped tiny teeth.
Courtesy of Nico Case.
They'll be like, what beautiful statuesque woman bit you on the face? They'll just be able to tell by the shape of the bite.
Those are really perfect. That is, those are perfect bite marks.
Yeah.
Those are legitimately perfect bite marks.
Mm-hmm.
You got to watch... You don't have to do whatever. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do. This is a great show that I keep telling people about called Homicide Hunter.
Homicide Hunter?
It's a cop.
I already like it.
It's on Investigation Discovery. I think we're going to get him on the podcast. It's a cop named Joe Kenda. He's probably in his 70s now. And he was a homicide detective in Colorado Springs in the early 90s and the 80s and the 90s. And they're just all stories about he solved like 400 homicides. There were so many homicides, and he solved like 400 homicides in every episode. He's kind of narrating, and the reenactments are really good, but he's just sort of narrating how he solved the case.
And back in the day, you could walk out your front door and solve a homicide. People were just dropping like flies everywhere around you.
Oh, that guy did it. Yeah. Oh, fuck that guy.
Saw you in my rear view. You did it.
So I think you will enjoy that show.
Homicide Hunter.
Homicide Hunter with Lieutenant Joe Kenda.
Can we make a cop show?
Yeah.
Where we just hang around in the office?
Yep. Hardwick and we'll call it Case Closed. Nico K. Case Closed.
Oh, I've never heard that one before.
Wait a minute. What? Any joke that you could ever think of with someone's name.
Yeah.
They've never heard of one.
I'm trying to... No, I didn't. I thought I stumped someone the other day, but I didn't.
Stump someone how?
Of all the things that little kids think are mean to call each other, when I was a kid, it always was about being gay.
Yeah.
Like every single one.
Sure.
And any name, yeah, it was wrong. But that's how it went.
In the old days.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the
70s and
80s. Back in the 70s and the 1900s. I've just started saying the 1900s.
Yeah.
I
made a joke about our steel player being so old that he was using hide glue to fix something on stage. Nobody laughed.
What?
I was fucking angry at the show? Yeah.
You know, I think your audience needs to understand how fucking funny you are. And if they don't like it, they can fuck off.
If they don't want to laugh about his fucking trench warfare experience and his hide glue skills,
they are too.
I don't need them.
Too much time filming your show with their iPhones and not enough time.
Go get Brazilians, guys!
All of you, wax, wax.
Go get Brazilians and make selfies.
Just rip out that hair from puss to butt. Just get rid of it.
What's that gross English one, like from soup to tits or something? So gross.
Yeah, I think it's something like that. I don't know.
You know who you need to have on your show?
Who?
Is Sally Timms.
Okay.
From the Mekons.
Great.
I think she's the funniest person who's ever lived.
All right.
I don't know what just made me. I was thinking English, and I was like, I saw her yesterday, and I think I actually said to her, I was like, God, Sally, you look great. Because I hadn't seen her around. I think she said, oh, God, yes. I've lost a lot of weight. I hope it's not like a cancer. And I was just like, wow.
Well, good to see you.
Oh, I hope it's not like a cancer.
No,
you need to have her on the show.
And how are you supposed to respond to that? No.
Well, I know her well enough to know that
oh.
It's pretty hilarious, although she probably actually meant it for a second.
Well, then I think.
Oh, I know.
No, I think it's funnier if you respond like well, that. It might be, you know, like, and then you just walk away.
No, she's too canny for that.
Okay. I'll have her on.
Too canny. She's the funniest person there
is. I'll have on people you recommend. November 13th. Pick up the discography on vinyl.
If you want to. It's your personal choice.
Yeah, no one's going to force you, but fucking no. Do it.
We worked really hard on the artwork and the mastering.
But don't let that sway you. Mm-mm. You know, you got stuff to do.
It does come with the digital download codes, too. So it's if you're one of those people that's so weird, you can't take it out of the package, and you just want to look at it, you can still listen to it digitally.
So you have no fucking excuse. But don't let that sway you.
No.
But let it sway you.
I'm a terrible salesman for myself.
I mean, buy this maybe.
Oh, if you want.
I mean, you know, I'm sure there's other stuff you could do with that money. But don't worry about it. Just pick it up.
Only if you really want to.
Yeah. But then that would make me want to. Like, oh. See, she doesn't.
It's not a pity buy.
It's not
just
a pity buy.
Just do it if you want it.
Yeah.
It's just my life. It's just my life that I gave to you. That's why I'm childless and alone on a mountain now.
You have a lot of children. You've given them music babies. No,
my womb is like my womb is a dusty haunted billiard parlor.
Is it full of balls?
No, for some reason I just envisioned like the games room on the Titanic or something at the bottom of the sea, but then it was dusty.
Yeah.
I was trying to make it as bad as I could in my mind.
It's the one room on the Titanic that didn't get flooded.
Yes, and it's very deserty in there.
Yeah, it's just there's just old spats inside and lots of weird...
Mm-hmm.
Just weird opera gloves and things.
And it's kind of like The Shining.
A little
also.
Bit. Yeah. So anyway, buy the album.
My womb is like a dusty men's room in The Shining.
Well, if that's not your next album title, then you are doing something wrong, because that is a perfect album title.
I think I just admit that. I don't even think I have to say it or write it on the cover.
No. No, you need to make that just for the album art alone. The album art behind that would be amazing.
Fecund mother goddess. FMG. FMG.
Coming soon to a record player near you.
Yes.
And digital download. And HD.
FD.
Good day. FDS.
Falcon.
Femin deodorant spray.
Falcon deodorant spray.
Falcon deodorant spray. Does your falcon feel not fresh?
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by The Message, a new sci-fi series that will blur the lines between reality and fiction the same way War of the Worlds did almost 80 years ago.
Please don't try to kill yourselves, guys. This is not like War of the Worlds 80 years ago where you have to kill yourself on a farm.
We're a little more savvy. Don't miss a second of this new modern-day War of the Worlds podcast from GE Podcast Theater in Panoply called The Message. Subscribe today to The Message on iTunes or your favorite podcast app.